Yeah, I was looking at this stat. I was, you know, one of my favorite preview issues as far as on the newsstands, as far as an upcoming football season, Phil Still's college football preview. And I was noticing this stat, and I understand, I mean, even an Auburn guy can figure this out. Who's had the best overall record in the SEC over the last 10 years?
You mean Alabama?
There you go. See, that's what I'm curious, if you can tell me the three teams that are basically virtually tied for second during this last 10-year span, and there's only two games separating these three teams.
Last 10 years, I would say Georgia.
Yep, that's one.
And I would say Mississippi State.
Nope, Mississippi State's down. It's Georgia, LSU, Florida. But the interesting part is that those three teams basically have all three of them right at three times the number of losses than Alabama during that 10-year time frame. So just something that caught my attention. Knew Alabama would be there, but it was the other three teams there that are, you know, battling it out, trying to get into that conversation. With regards, let's start with the West. And, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, Auburn and Gus Malzahn and the year that could have been last season. But then when the calendar turned in December, the season certainly did not play out the way that everybody expected. What is life like as far as that Auburn backfield, you know, without Kerryon Johnson and moving forward?
Well, it's going to be intriguing to watch because there's a lot of unknowns and a lot of uncertainties. I think that there'll be a lot of guys that have an opportunity to be able to make an impact. Life without Kerryon Johnson was not kind to the Auburn Tigers a year ago. Not 100% in that Clemson game. Couldn't get the run game going there. We saw what happened against Central Florida and Georgia in the SEC Championship game when he wasn't necessarily 100% in those contests. So it's a Gus Malzahn offense that is – used to having a 1,000-yard running back. They have the longest streak in the SEC, eight consecutive seasons of a rusher going over 1,000 yards, looking to make it 9 this year. Gus Malzahn tells me it will go to 9. I'm not sure Cam Martin has the durability to be able to do it. And I'm not sure we're going to know who it is until maybe week 3 or 4, because I think this offense with Jared Stidham at the helm, especially having to play Washington early, they're not going to test their luck and experiment very much in that game. And then you got LSU week 3, and that's going to be an elite front seven with the best linebacker in college football returning in Devin White and a pretty good middle of that defense with Rashard Lawrence and company, where you're not going to be able to mess around in that game either. So I think this offense probably runs the ball through the air a little bit more, Johnny. Quick screens, quick ball distribution, get it out in the flat, allow Jared Stidham to sort of work his intermediate accuracy and getting the ball out in a quick, accurate fashion, as opposed to just running behind an offensive line that's retooled and also not knowing exactly who you're go-to running back is going to be. All that being said, we won't know for a while. Cam Martin will get the start, but I think a guy like Boobie Whitlow is probably a little bit better able to handle the load, probably more durable, and probably the north-south runner that they want, and I think he could be a guy. Asa Martin, true freshman that's coming in from Decatur, Alabama, probably going to get a shot there. So there are multiple candidates. We just don't necessarily know how it's going to work out.
One of the other things is, while we stick with Auburn a little bit, as far as that offensive line, you know, the team allowed 36 sacks. 14 of those occurred in the first two games, including the 11 against Clemson. And then, you know, the offensive line righted the ship until they faced off against Central Florida, and Central Florida was able to accumulate 6 more. You know, a lot of new faces as far as the offensive line. And to me, it as far as when we look at that offense, besides Stidham being able to keep on improving his consistency there with the receivers, it still depends on the offensive line buying him time.
It does, and there'll be some faces that they really miss. Braden Smith would be the easy one. Everyone knows that he has been an absolute rock on that Auburn offensive line the last 3.5 years, hasn't missed a game, 40-something consecutive starts, as durable as they get and almost as good as they get as far as SEC offensive linemen go the last 3-4 years. He'll be missed at guard, but Austin Golson was the guy that sort of kept that thing together last year. He started at 4 different positions, played center, played tackle, played guard, really played 5 different positions because he was sort of moved over to be the bonus overload tackle in heavy formation sometimes as well. But I'll tell you, Casey Dunn was the guy that really stepped up and did something that they needed, and that was give them a presence at center last year. He was the one, the Jacksonville State transfer, that allowed Austin Golson to be able to move around. So when they needed him at right tackle, needed him at left tackle, or needed him at guard, he was able to fill in any of those roles. So he was able to be the Swiss Army knife for that offensive line because of what Casey Dunn brought at center. Now, you lost two centers in the spring. So Caleb Kim and Nick Brom both go down in the spring. One of those two guys probably wins that position. I think Nick Brom's a little more physical guy. Caleb Kim, the more experienced guy. That'll be a battle to watch, but hopefully that provides a little bit of depth at that position moving forward. I think they're going to be fine at guard. Tackle's the big question because Prince Tega-Wanabu has all the ability in the world at left tackle, and he has the perfect tackle frame. Fundamentally, can he put it together? Technically, can he put it together? I think that's probably the biggest question mark of this football team going into the season that could decide games either direction. Right tackle, you've got Austin Troxell, you got Calvin Astley, they're going to compete over there. And you've also got the Maryland transfer, the UMass transfer, Jack Driscoll, who has played in a very similar system that could offer some depth.
Cole Kublik with the SEC Network joining us. Let's turn our attention to Vanderbilt. And one of the things that really sticks out to me, comparing last year to 2016, in the losses inside conference play, the fact that, and look, I know a lot of that has to do with the 59-0 loss to Alabama, but still, Vanderbilt's average margin of defeat in those losses in conference play, almost 23 points per game. For me, it doesn't necessarily mean that the offense has to score a lot of points, but certainly for me to shorten these games, Kyle Shurmur leading that offense, they have to shorten the games by keeping the clock moving, because depth-wise, they're not going to be able to stay on the field with most of the teams in conference play. And one of the best ways that you can solve that problem is keep the clock moving, keep the chains moving.
I agree. The offensive line's got to step up. And they have to play better football, especially if they're going to run the style offense that Andy Ludwig wants to run. But I heard rave reviews of Kyle Shurmur coming out of the Manning Academy this past weekend.
Right.
He looked great. And I've heard good things just about people around the program. And I think he's a really good college quarterback. He's a guy who, let's be honest, physically, his skill set, he needs some help. He's not going to go out there athletically and be able to take over a football game. He's smart. He's coachable. He understands the game. He understands his system. He just needs some players around him to step up, and they've lost some skill guys the past few years. But the offensive line, I think, is the key for Vanderbilt. Because like you said, Derek Mason's going to have a plan in place to allow that defense to be successful. And they've got some guys who can go out and help make that defense successful. But they must protect that defense offensively at times throughout the course of the year. And that means moving the chains. That means flipping the field. And that means chewing clock. And if they can't do that, then I think ultimately the team suffers and the team might not have a chance to get back to be bowl eligible again. So there's a lot on that offensive line at Vanderbilt as far as how much success they have this season.
What do you think about Jake Bentley, the junior quarterback for South Carolina? The time that I've spent around him, I really like him. You can see how and why his teammates will follow him. Your thoughts about him leading South Carolina's offense?
Tough, physical, gamer, leader, spark plug, energy. I like a lot about his game. He needs to take the next step from a passing perspective, but I have all the confidence in the world that he can do it, and he has almost as good weapons as anybody in the league. When you look at Rico Dowdle in the backfield and A.J. Turner in the backfield, Ebo Samuel, Brian Edwards out on the outside, they got a freshman receiver they're really excited about. So if Zach Bailey going down to guard helps this offensive line improve just enough, just a little bit, and I think also speeding things up will help Jake Bentley. He will have to process less information, and he's gone fast before. So I think that will actually give him more advantages than it would some other guys because he already has an understanding of the speed of the game and the expectations of what defenses are going to look like and things that he's going to get on the field. So I think doing that to that offense, he'll benefit from that maybe more than anybody else. So I have high expectations for South Carolina. Again, I think they get Georgia at a great spot. I think Jake Bentley's the kind of leader you want on your football team. Now, depth at that position is not necessarily what you want. You got a young guy who's super athletic who may take some snaps away from him to just change things up, but defensively is where the problems may come. Jake Bentley and that offense are not going to be an issue for South Carolina. The defense is where the potential issues may arise.
Yeah, you bring up the Georgia contest. It's the second week of the season between South Carolina and Georgia. South Carolina opening week, they get ready for Georgia by playing Coastal Carolina, while the Georgia Bulldogs, before they travel to South Carolina, they play host to Austin Peay. So my guess is both the Gamecocks and the Bulldogs will be playing it pretty vanilla in both of those games.
Probably, yeah. And, we're looking at a top 25 team and a top 5 team going to Williams-Brice at 2:30 on CBS week 2. And Georgia's got a lot of pieces they need to replace. John Atkins at defensive tackle, Roquan Smith at inside linebacker. We obviously know about the edge guys, Lorenzo Carter, Davin Bellamy, that are going to be gone. The offensive line loses the first-round pick, and Isaiah Wynn, Sony Michel, Nick Chubb gone. It's not to say there's not some great players coming back. There are. And I think that offensive line is the best returning in the SEC. I think Jake Fromm is an absolute gamer. I think he's a leader. I think he's a heady quarterback who understands how to work his system that he operates in. And I think the intangibles with Jake Fromm are as good as any other quarterback in the league, maybe in the nation. And Swift in the backfield, Holyfield in the backfield, they've got guys. And I think the receiver position is a little better with Ridley, but you put Isaac Nauta at tight end, that big offensive line with Thomas and Cleveland, they're going to be tough to deal with. And the outcome of that game will probably be decided by the South Carolina front seven on defense. If they get stopped and they can disrupt that Georgia running game, which then disrupts the RPO game and the play-action game, South Carolina can win that football game. Because I promise you don't want Georgia late. Because Sam Pittman will have that offensive line figured out by the end of the year, and Jim Chaney will make his adjustments throughout the course of the season. You're not going to want Georgia late. If you're going to get them, you probably need to get them early. And if you're not just a super talented football team, kind of like Auburn was a year ago, South Carolina's not as talented as Georgia, but they got a shot week 2 at Williams-Brice to be able to pull the upset.
Well, they're not as talented as Georgia, but they do return 14 starters. They return 55, and they return 55 letter winners. So they've got the depth, especially early on. And you know as well as I do, it takes a little bit for everybody to get on the right track, and everybody having that machine roll just like it needs to. And by the second week, that may not be the case for the Georgia Bulldogs.
It's so funny that you say that, because we had this debate on my show on Jocks in Birmingham today. And our host, Landon Roberts, we're having Big 12 week. We're talking West Virginia. And he keeps bringing up their last 4 games of the year. And it's a brutal of a stretch as you'll see in college football, especially to close the season. It may be the most brutal stretch. But I can speak as a former player. Johnny, you're playing your best ball at the end of the season. That's when you're most comfortable. That's when you're in the best game shape. Sure, guys are a little bit beat up and nicked up, but if you're nicked up and you're playing, you know how to deal with it by that point in time, unless you're just flat out injured and it's a new injury, which those happen early and those happen late. We just talked about Deebo Samuel. He got hurt in third game of the season. So injuries happen all across the year. I don't know what this obsession with people is that, they have to play them late. They have to play them late. I would want to play all my tough games late. You're a better football team, mate. I don't understand this obsession with wanting to play teams early. Or why somebody should be afraid of a good football team playing another good football team late. That's when you're playing your best ball. The weather's better. You know your teammates better. You've honed in on what you do better as a team. Everything is in your favor late as opposed to early. And I don't know why some people get so enamored with, I don't know if they can win that game. They get them late. Well, your team should be as good as they're going to be late. So if you're more talented and you have better coaches, you should win that game.
But Georgia does have more talent, and that's the concern. Well, if you're South Carolina, you'd rather get Georgia in September than
Absolutely.
In November. By the way, you brought up West Virginia, and I was talking about them. At what point, you have to show me on the field before we buy into West Virginia under Dana Holgorsen? I mean, here he is in his 8th year, and you go back to, 2 years ago, a double-digit win season. But for the most part, when you look at West Virginia, you look at a program that's underperformed during his time frame. Do you agree? Especially starting with year 2 and to where we are at this point.
I don't know about underperform. What were the realistic expectations? Are we expecting them to be in the playoffs? I mean, I'm not going to say underperform. Now, West Virginia's a school, and here's the thing. I'm rooting for West Virginia this year because, Johnny, we need some new blood. You tell me, I'm just being honest with you. You give me Alabama-Clemson again, I'm giving you eye roll. I don't need it again.
Oh,
I really
I'm not going to disagree, and, but what I, reason I bring up West Virginia, we're talking about an enrollment over 30,000. But when I say underperformed, I mean, is it acceptable for West Virginia, starting in 2012, 7 wins, 4 wins, 7 wins, 8 wins? They did get the 10 wins in 2016, and what do? They parlay that into a 7-6 record last year. That's why, as a whole, starting with year two to where we are today, I say West Virginia has underperformed.
There's some accuracy to that, but I'll say this. West Virginia is never going to be a team that's winning 10 or 11 every year and knocking on the door of the playoffs. They're going to be a team that every few years, they get some older guys back, they have a quarterback, they have a trigger man, they have some leadership, and they get hot, and then they go on a run, and they might make it into the playoffs. Now, that's where we probably have, more of those teams than we do teams that are just going to be knocking on the door every year. Because, I mean, this year we got Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma, and, I mean, who else? Who else you got? Michigan? Wisconsin?
Yep, basically.
I mean, I can make a strong case against those teams not getting in and why they won't get in. Florida State's not there yet. Virginia Tech is not there yet. Miami's got a lot of magic to recreate if they're going to do what they did last year, and I don't know if they can do it. So it's kind of like we got our regular 3, 4, 5 usual suspects, and then who else is going to step up? And most of those teams are teams that are just not going to be there every year. They're not built that way. They can't do what those other teams can do. So it's going to have to be every few years, throw together 11 wins, hope you get into the playoffs. And that's why I think we're probably going to see more teams. We just heard Bronco Mendenhall say this not long ago. He's like, I want to play the worst group of five out-of-conference opponent as humanly possible. Because he understands if he ever has that kind of team, that's probably the only chance he's going to have to even be in the playoff discussion, is to be undefeated and have a Kansas or a Baylor on his schedule and say, well, we got that group of five non-conference opponents. It's not our fault that they won one game last year. So that's kind of where we are. And I think it's unfortunate because I really do think that we're staring down the barrel of, I don't want to say mediocrity, but just repetitiveness in college football. People are going to get bored with it. Georgia saved us last year. Georgia saved the football season last year. Now, Oklahoma was fun, but let's be honest. We expect Oklahoma to be there just about every year. Georgia saved the college football season last year because they made it interesting and they made it different. Who's going to do that this year? Who can do that this year? They're just not a very long list, in my opinion.
Hey, don't sleep fall asleep on Florida State just yet. If they take care of business,
I'm not
labor
sleeping on them, but they're not going to the playoff this year.
Well, before you say that, here's the thing: their schedule sets up nicely for the opportunity because they host Virginia Tech on Labor Day night. If they're able to find a way to get that win, they're favored by 6.5. They're going to go into the month of October 5-0. They have to then go to play Miami. Well, remember, Miami had to score in the final 6 seconds to beat the Seminoles this past season. And they get Clemson at home the last Saturday of October. I'm just saying it's a schedule designed for a team to improve week in and week out. Plus, they had some talent there in the first place. It wasn't like Jimbo left the covers bare. So just saying, Florida State could be that surprise team depending on how things play out, especially opening week.
I think Cam Akers is great. DeAndre Francois can be a good college quarterback. Brian Burns is going to be a lead off the edge, but they lost a lot. They lost Derek Nnadi inside. They lost Sweat off the edge. They weren't James on the backside. They don't have any offensive linemen coming back. That group has been trashed for years. So they're going to have who are the weapons on the outside? And who's going to block for DeAndre Francois and make sure he doesn't get hurt again? They're not ready. I love Willie Taggart. He's going to get it right. He's going to get them in contention, but it's not going to be this year.
Before we let you go, I know you got a message from Southern RV Wholesale.
It's easy, Johnny. Go to srvwholesale.com. That's srvwholesale.com today. If you're looking for a fifth wheel, travel trailer, toy hauler, or motorhome, you can buy, sell, rent, you can trade yours in, you can finance it on site. To get the best deals in America on a towable, click the fire sale tab at srvwholesale.com.
Have a great rest of the week, Cole. We appreciate you, and have a very nice and safe 4th of July. We'll talk to you after the 4th.
Thanks, Johnny.